Hello and welcome to another episode of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast. I am Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media. We are doing a special Bitcoin is at $90,000 episode of the podcast. We are going to return to doing our the part two of the FUD series that we started a couple weeks ago now with Oshawa Hawthorne. Oshawa's still going to join us and we're going to finish that off. But we have some news, and that news is that Bitcoin is at $90,000 right now. Earlier this week, it touched as high as $93,500. And so, again, for many people, this came out of nowhere. I've had a number of people sending me DMs on Facebook and Twitter and asking me questions about, you know, where to buy, how much to buy, all this kind of stuff. And so I just decided, you know what, we haven't done episodes like this in the past, just more current events related ones. And I think now is a great time to do that. So I just decided I'm going to solo pod a kind of timely, current event driven apologetic for potentially you or your friends or family who are just kind of waking up again to Bitcoin. And, you know, might have questions about why Bitcoin is doing what it's doing. So another thing, forgive me if this sounds a little bit different than our previous podcast, or you're welcome, because if by any chance it sounds better, I am traveling right now with my family, and so I am set up in a place that's more of an open room. So if you hear a little bit of an echo, that's what that's due to. So before we get launched here, I want to just remind you guys that this podcast is brought to you by CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a health insurance alternative. My family and I use CrowdHealth and have been just greatly benefited from it. It's basically works differently than a normal insurance. They basically, you pay for each member of your family. It's far more economic than normal insurances. And basically what CrowdHealth team does on your behalf is when you have a health event, you get the bill, you pay for it, and then they basically work on your behalf to negotiate cash prices with the actual health providers themselves, bypassing the insurance system and saving you lots of money in the long term. I've done an episode where I interviewed Andy Schoonover, who is the founder and CEO of CrowdHealth. Go listen to that episode if this interests you. Again, it's just a lot more sane and cost-effective way to do health insurance for most people, I would say, especially if you're younger. If you're a younger family, I would definitely go check out CrowdHealth. You can use promo code TGFB at checkout, and for your first 3 months, you'll get 30% off. So go ahead and go do that. This podcast is also brought to you by River. River is our preferred and recommended place for people to buy Bitcoin. River basically is the most trusted and just the best people in the biz in terms of they built everything from the inside out. Again, they are great folks doing great work, and so we recommend them. They have a lot of good free educational resources on their website at theriver.com/learn tab. And then once you've gotten comfortable and feel like you're ready to move forward and actually buy some Bitcoin, you can go to river.com/TGFB. And use our promo code to buy Bitcoin through them. Basically, again, if you would rather, even if we didn't have a promo code with them, they are the people that we would recommend. If for some reason you're like, I don't know if I want to have the potential conflict of interest of, you guys getting a kickback on that, I still would recommend them even if you don't use our code. So, and again, we have friends and know all the people in this industry. So, they're where we would go to buy Bitcoin. So we are both grateful for both of those sponsors. And our last sponsor, we never had so many sponsors right now. Our last sponsor is Farmer Bills. Farmer Bills makes biltong and other beef product goods. They reached out to us and basically asked us about the possibility of sponsoring the podcast. And so we were thrilled. I actually told the guy who reached out, I said, hey, I don't want to be a sponsor, and if I haven't tried your product, so can you send me some of the product? They sent it to me, and I tried it. They have a spicy version that is very spicy, so if you like spicy, it's going to be right up your alley. And then they have a normal one that doesn't have the spice that is fantastic. I've got a South African friend who introduced me to Biltong a number of years ago. And so I was keen for the picking when he kind of reached out to me and can highly recommend it from personal experience. Again, all three of these sponsors are helping us, still exist and helping us do the work to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. So we would love for you guys to go and support them, help them to do what they're doing to make the world a better and more, more sane place. So we're going to get into our podcast episode today. So why is Bitcoin exploding right now? Why is Bitcoin at $90,000? Over the last about 2.5, almost 3 years, Bitcoin's price had settled in somewhere between it had gone down as low as $17,000 from its previous high of $69,000. And then it kind of went back up and kind of came to rest around $40,000, between $40,000 and $50,000. It was kind of hanging out there. And so people just got normalized. That price was normalized for a lot of people. And so when they, woke up probably earlier this week and saw that, Bitcoin's at $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, they're sitting there thinking to themselves, what on earth is happening that maybe they're not aware of that would result in that kind of big jump in the price. The actual answer is that there's a number of different reasons. And so we're going to outline a number of them that are all kind of coinciding at the same time to result in this big jump in price. So first of all, the thing is the halving. One of the things that has happened, that one of the ways that Bitcoin is designed to work is that every 4 years, the daily new issuance of Bitcoin available to the market. So the new Bitcoin that is every day introduced into the world, that gets cut in half every 4 years. So for instance, up until April of this year, every new Bitcoin block that was mined awarded a block subsidy or a reward for finding the Bitcoin or for mining that block. It awarded 6.25 Bitcoin to whoever it was that owned the Bitcoin miner that found that block. They awarded them 6.25 Bitcoin. Now, in April of this year, the halving happened. And so now, every 10 minutes when a Bitcoin block is mined, that block reward is now about 3.2 Bitcoin or 3.125 Bitcoin. And so basically what this means is that there is now less Bitcoin introduced every 10 minutes into the world over the next 4 years than there was the 4 years previous. That doesn't change the overall supply cap of Bitcoin. There will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. And the last Bitcoin will be mined in the year 2140. So nothing about that has changed. But the amount that's introduced every day from now on into the world has been cut in half as of April and will only get more scarce over time. So in 4 years, so in 2025, or let's see, no, 2028, this will happen again. And the number of Bitcoin that we mine every day is like 1.6, whatever that is. So the effect that that has is, every year that goes by, the number of Bitcoin users increases exponentially. There are, but that's happened for 16 years. Bitcoin's growth, the number of people who are understanding it, buying it, valuing it, trading it, selling it, whatever it is, that number has continued to grow exponentially. And every 4 years, the amount of Bitcoin gets cut in half. So you have these supply shocks. You have a shock in the amount of Bitcoin that's available for all those people to buy. And so the only thing to settle that supply shock is for the price to gap up. And so that's what you've seen in part. And so basically what we've seen up to this point, now there's debate about whether this will always happen, but what we've seen happen the last three halvings at least is basically the you have, once the halving happens, okay, so it happened in April of this year, when the halving happens, the following 18 months will experience a Bitcoin bull market. And so the price of Bitcoin will go up significantly. In the past, that's happened. The amount has been anywhere from 3x to about 10x. And so that's kind of at least part of what's driving, what's going on. It's pretty par for the course. This is what happens. It's just part of Bitcoin's normal adoption and part of it's a feature of just the way that Bitcoin works. Now, there is something that makes this halving in the 18 months that are following this particular halving different. And that is the fact that Donald John Trump was elected president of the United States. Now, what on earth could that have to do with anything? Well, basically, the two primary candidates for president had two vastly different approaches and understandings and campaign strategies regarding Bitcoin. On the part of the Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris, she and her, basically her team and the Democrats more broadly have come out vocally against Bitcoin, trying to do everything they can to shut down Bitcoin. Probably the individual who is most singly responsible for that antipathy showed towards Bitcoin is Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's been a vocal opponent. I'm somewhat sympathetic to her hostility to it because there were a number of scandals that happened within the broader crypto world that weren't specific to Bitcoin or rooted in any kind of flaw with Bitcoin. But there were companies that just did good old fashioned fraud that happened to sell Bitcoin as one of their products. And so she kind of, in response to that, wanted to shut down Bitcoin and ban it and do all kinds of stuff. So that was the approach that the Democrats took. Former President and President-elect Trump took the polar opposite approach. And they basically aligned themselves pretty completely with the Bitcoin folks and the crypto industry more broadly, capped off by President Trump speaking at the Bitcoin conference BTC 24 in Nashville, Tennessee this past summer. So that would be in July of this year. So President Trump became the first presidential candidate to speak at a Bitcoin conference. And so basically he pledged that if he won, he would be a close friend of Bitcoin. He would protect Bitcoin. He would help Bitcoin mining to be, he basically wants the United States to be a Bitcoin-friendly place and vowed to do everything in his power to make that happen should he be elected. Now, Bitcoiners are an increasingly large and powerful political contingent. According to some polls, there is 5% of the country. Basically, 44 to 47% of the country owns some sort of cryptocurrency. And 5% of that of the country considers themselves a single issue crypto voter or a single issue Bitcoin voter. So whoever is going to be acting in the best interest of Bitcoin, they're going to vote for. This resulted in many people that are acquaintances or friends of mine who would not normally vote for the Republican candidate or even a socially conservative candidate voting for someone or voting for President Trump in this case. And so going forward, the issue of Bitcoin is going to increasingly become a bipartisan issue. It's going to become something that, you're not going to see, parties coming out against Bitcoin. And so it's something that it appears at this point we've passed the days in which countries are going to try to ban it. In the past, we'd seen authoritarian countries like China ban Bitcoin. Over the 16 years of its existence, China has banned Bitcoin a total of 7 times. Now, those of you who are, not math illiterate can sit there and think about that and say, well, why did they have to ban it 7 times? And it's because they had to unban it 6 times and appear poised to remove that 7th ban here in the near future. The guy who had facilitated and put forward the ban on Bitcoin mining in China, it was just announced either today or yesterday that he was fired. China seems to be prepared to take a far more friendly approach to Bitcoin going forward, not out of desire, because they like to maintain absolute control over their currency and currency controls, but out of necessity, because they're, with the United States, one of their, chief political, rivals, if they're going to be adopting it, then all of a sudden it creates a necessity for them to take it more seriously and consider holding some themselves. So the United States is taking a farmer friendly approach, and that understanding has been a reason why Bitcoin has jumped up a lot. As part of the capstone of Trump's plans for Bitcoin, one of the biggest things is that Senator Cynthia Lummis, who's a Republican closely allied and working closely with the Trump campaign to help them understand Bitcoin, she has is going to be putting forth legislation to establish a Bitcoin strategic reserve. She is putting forth a desire for the United States to buy 1 million Bitcoin over the next 5 years. That works out to be, for the, again, the math, maybe if you're not the greatest at math, 200,000 Bitcoin, not $200,000 worth of Bitcoin, but, or, you know, $1 million worth of Bitcoin. We're talking 200,000 Bitcoin every year for the next 5 years. That will do that will affect the price of Bitcoin a ton. There are some reports that basically there's no way that the United States will be able to buy 1 million Bitcoin with Bitcoin priced under $1 million a coin. Again, that just has to do with the scarcity of Bitcoin. There's normally only about 2 million liquid Bitcoin on the market at any given time. So if the United States is going to come out and just flat buy 1 million of them, it's going to pump Bitcoin's price a lot. And so there's a number of people, many people are trying to front run that action. Again, the legislation has not been passed yet, but it's been put forward publicly. It seems by all accounts that both President Trump and a good number of people within his budding cabinet are open to doing that. And so it looks like that's going to be more and more of a realistic reality. And so, again, people are acting to front run that and buy as much Bitcoin as they can while it's still at lower prices before countries like the United States, China, all the other countries begin buying it up. Now, it's not just individual countries that are looking to buy Bitcoin. It's also economic unions. So, for instance, the BRICS nations, this is an economic union composed of, BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. But in the last few years, that's included a number of other countries, including Saudi Arabia. They are interested in holding, quote unquote, digital assets on their balance sheets and using it for international, business dealings that they might have. And so Bitcoin is the largest crypto asset or digital asset in the world. And so it looks like that's at least one of the things that they're considering holding. So the fact, if the United States buys it and then BRICS buys it, that's even less supply that will drive the price even higher. So that's another thing that's resulting in the price going up a lot. Two more things. Again, that might sound like enough to do it, but that is not enough, because it's not just nations or economic unions. There's also other states within the United States. So, for instance, Pennsylvania came out. This was basically somebody had some news about this a couple of months ago, that the state of Pennsylvania was going to be buying Bitcoin, but the legislation just went forward, looks likely to pass. The state of Florida has basically talked about doing something similar. And with, Bitcoin going up the way that it is in price, it's going to attract more attention. And it's very likely that many other states in the United States are going to do this at the state level and not just the national level. So all of these things are contributing. And then finally, there's probably way more. There's more that we could go into. But the final thing that is in contributing to Bitcoin's price going up is that there are companies that hold lots of Bitcoin and countries that are likely to buy Bitcoin in the near future. So one of the companies that holds the most Bitcoin is a company called MicroStrategy. MicroStrategy stock has exploded over the last 4 years since their CEO, Michael Saylor, decided to begin buying as much Bitcoin as he possibly could. And so they own, as of today, they own somewhere over 1% of all the Bitcoin that will ever exist. And so they continue to basically offer bonds, offer, debt, and then people continue to subscribe to that debt. And then MicroStrategy turns around and buys more Bitcoin with the money that people give them, promising a return in the near future. So MicroStrategy is buying up a ton more Bitcoin. So that's putting upward pressure on the price of Bitcoin. In addition to them, there's other companies. Tesla owns some Bitcoin. There's a number of smaller companies that own Bitcoin. And then there's companies like Microsoft that announced that they were going to be putting forward a vote to their shareholders about whether or not they wanted whether or not the shareholders wanted to consider buying Bitcoin for their treasury reserves. Even if they decide not to, the fact that they're considering it means that there's going to be many other companies that also consider it. And there's very likely going to be many of them that are going to be buying Bitcoin as well and holding it as a reserve asset if for no other reason than to help their stock go up. Because what MicroStrategy has done in buying Bitcoin, now it's not just MicroStrategy's core business that's drawing interest and drawing investors to them. It's both their core business and the fact that they hold a ton of Bitcoin that has provided billions of dollars in return for them over the last 4 years. So all of these things have created a powder keg for the price of Bitcoin. And that's kind of that's the reason why you're seeing the price action that you're seeing. So basically now, again, there's many of you who are thinking Bitcoin's at $90,000. It sounds like I missed the boat. What is the point of buying this at this point? That price seems inflated. You know, it's almost up 50% from where it was for the last couple of years. Why would I, or potentially even over that, why would I buy some right now? Well, again, if, you know, all of these nations are going to be buying, if all of these companies are going to start buying, if states, if economic entities like BRICS are going to be buying, then we have not seen anything approaching the top of what Bitcoin is going to do over the next at least 12 months, and very likely, very likely it's going to stay and continue to go up in value over the preceding months after that, just due to the fact that some of these entities, especially the United States, they're holding, the plan is for them to hold for at least like 10 years, I think is the language in the bill. So these are not these are not parties that are going to be governed by normal economic constraints. These aren't individuals who might have to sell some or might want to sell some to buy a house or to buy a car or to buy whatever. These actors have considerably longer time preference that's going to be governing what they do. There are people who are saying that just the United States alone buying Bitcoin is going to drive the price to $1 million a coin. With all these other entities, who knows where it could go? There's far more conservative estimates that see at least Bitcoin going to at least 180,000 by the end of 2025. We're not here to make price predictions, but just due to, understanding the way that Bitcoin works, understanding the parties that look like they're going to be buying, we are still nowhere near, what Bitcoin could be at in the next 12 months. So it's not near the top. So Bitcoin's got a lot more room to run. So if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I missed it, you have not missed it. Everyone's temptation when they first learn about Bitcoin during a time, mostly when Bitcoin is exploding in price, they think I missed it. We have examples of internet threads, web forum threads going back to literally 2012, when people said, oh, I missed the boom, I only own 1,500 Bitcoin, darn, I wish I would have heard about this sooner. Now that sounds insane, but that's just what happens. And so this is what we see happening, and the same thing is going to happen to many people, including potentially you, dear listener. So go ahead, learn about Bitcoin. Go to river.com/learn is a great place to, even before you've bought anything, learn about what it is, learn about how it works, and then buy some. Now, here's some other questions that I've gotten from people in the last week or two. What about other cryptocurrencies? What about these other things? Bitcoin seems like I've already missed the boat. We established that's not true, but people feel like that's the true. They have unit bias. Bitcoin at $90,000 seems so expensive. I don't have $90,000. What do I do? So let's answer that one first. I don't have $90,000 to buy a Bitcoin. What do I do? You don't have to buy a full Bitcoin. You can buy $5 worth of Bitcoin. You could buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. You could buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. All of these things are possible. You can buy as much or as little Bitcoin as you want or have the resources to buy. So don't let that keep you from buying Bitcoin. That is just a reality. You don't have to have $90,000. Now, with that said, if you do, let's say you're somebody listening to this and you do have, you are a wealthier person, you have lots of money, and you're sitting there thinking, okay, how much Bitcoin should I buy? The answer that I would give to you, if you are a wealthier, higher net worth individual, here's one fact. So there are today, 60 million, over 60 million millionaires in the world, dollar millionaires, denominated in dollars. There's 60 million people who are millionaires in the world. There are only 21 million Bitcoin. There will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. So they only it is impossible for there to be more than people speculate in this, more than between 500,000 and a million Bitcoin millionaires. I think that number is very likely to be smaller than that. But you can't have 60 million millionaires. So that means that there are not enough Bitcoin for every millionaire to own one. Now, that might sound like bad news. You might think to yourself, well, what's the point? How can Bitcoin be used globally if there's only 21 million of them and there's so many millionaires? Well, Bitcoin is hyper divisible. Every Bitcoin can be divided up into 100 million fractions that have become called Satoshis. So this is what allows you to buy such little fractions of Bitcoin. And if you break it up, you break each of the 21 million Bitcoin into 100 million fractions, that basically allows there to be more than enough units for every individual on Earth to transact using Bitcoin. So again, basically I'm saying if you have the resources to get one Bitcoin, okay, that is, I mean, right now $90,000 for Bitcoin is already a lot of money, but going into the future, if Bitcoin continues to go up in price the way that it is, the possibility or the fact that you have the ability to own one Bitcoin, I mean, that's going to be, it's a possibility that's quickly escaping the vast majority of people. So again, if you're a higher net worth individual, you have, you know, millions and millions of dollars, owning one Bitcoin as part of your diversification of your investments and stuff is a incredible thing to shoot for. So now, what about other cryptocurrencies? Bitcoin's very high. What about other cryptocurrencies? You probably have heard of Ethereum or Doge or Litecoin or, you know, any one of these other, Solana, all these other things. There are people who are big advocates of those things. I am not, and TGFB is not. We do not advocate any of those other cryptocurrencies. There's a number of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that basically Bitcoin was created for a very different purpose than many of those other cryptocurrencies. And that comes out, you can see that evidenced by when these other cryptocurrencies were created. So Bitcoin is created in 2009 to be money that a government couldn't hyperinflate. Bitcoin is created in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, in which many of these banking entities were profligately gambling, and they were properly bailed out by the government. Almost no one went to jail. There were very little consequences for these large, governing and banking entities. By contrast, the people who had bought homes or were given loans for homes that they never should have qualified for, they lost everything. Many people lost jobs. There were all kinds of awful consequences. Bitcoin was created in the aftermath of that system to provide a system that does not require the same degree of trust, in blind trust in entities that can act against the best interests of their citizens. Bitcoin does that very well. It does that incredibly well. And so Bitcoin existed for 2 years, kind of in, not in secrecy, but just in kind of obscurity. Nobody was paying attention to it. It just seemed like a fun thing. There were very few people who took it very seriously. But in 2011, Bitcoin monetized. And Bitcoin monetized by the fact, or during the action, that someone was willing to accept Bitcoin as payment for the first time. This person is a guy named Laszlo. He basically said, hey, I'm willing to pay someone in Bitcoin. I'm willing to pay someone in Bitcoin if they're willing to sell me something. And so he found somebody who said, hey, what if I sell you a couple of pizzas? And so Laszlo said, great. And so the guy said, they started negotiating back and forth. And this guy said, hey, I'll give you two pizzas if you give me 10,000 Bitcoin. Today, that sounds insane. But back then, again, Bitcoin wasn't used to purchase things back then. And so Laszlo said, great, I'll give you 10,000 Bitcoin for two pizzas. And so once that happened, Bitcoin monetized. And people realized, wait a second. Now this, you can actually buy real world things with Bitcoin. And so that kind of set off a chain reaction of people realizing, wait a second, especially developers, wait, cryptocurrencies actually aren't that difficult to make. You can spin up somebody who knows what they're doing can spin up a cryptocurrency in about 15 minutes. And so what this allowed people realized that they could spin up cryptocurrencies. They could, where they where they controlled them. They controlled the issuance schedule. They controlled all the rules about them. And basically, many of these programmers realized that this would become an incredibly lucrative thing. And so basically what a lot of them did is they said, all right, we're going to set an amount, the total supply of these different cryptocurrencies. Let's set it, you know, for our purposes, for sake of easy math, 100 million units. Bitcoin's only got 21 million. Let's create a currency that has 100 million units. And so here's what we'll do. Let's say there's three programmers. Each of those three programmers says, all right, we're going to each take 20 million of these currency units. So then that you know, leaves 40 million more. Some of them said, okay, here, let's do this. Let's, here's a celebrity who can help us basically spread awareness about this coin. So let's give them 10 million units. We'll find another celebrity or well-respected person. We'll give them another 10 million units. And then that will leave 20 million units that we'll put on the market for normal people to buy and sell. And so this was done in 2012, 2013, 2014. Many people did this. Many cryptocurrencies were created to the point that today there's over 10,000 cryptocurrencies. And so what this did was, because people had unit bias, people saw the price of Bitcoin already going up, and they said, oh, look, here's these new ones. This is, you know, quote unquote, the new Bitcoin. They started buying lots of those. And so many of these project creators, these people, these small entities who created these cryptocurrencies, a lot of these 20% of these currencies sold up very quickly. The value of these currencies rose incredibly quickly. And then the founders of these currencies proceeded to sell some of their units and became millionaires, billionaires, multi-billionaires very quickly, basically overnight. And so this was the motivation for the creation of these other cryptocurrencies. In many cases, it was to be able to get fabulously wealthy very quickly. Some of them, there are, you know, other use cases. There's people trying to think about and use them and explore and try different things that you can't do on Bitcoin. And so that's why some of them are created. But again, in terms of investment grade cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin is the only one that is going to last, basically, because of how it works. It works vastly differently. It's the only one that has the level of security that Bitcoin does. Bitcoin has already, as we mentioned, withstood attacks by nations, withstood attacks by a number of different people. Over the last 16 years, it's been able to withstand them, and these other cryptocurrencies are not able to withstand it to anywhere near the same degree, just because of the way that they're designed. Almost every other cryptocurrency has a foundation or a group of people that could be attacked, that could be threatened, that could be manipulated to act in against the interest of those people who hold the currency. And so basically they're not as secure. So we don't mess with any of them. An additional reason, this is a purely pragmatic reason, if you look at the price of all of those cryptocurrencies, not denominated against dollars, which is the tempting way to look at them, look at all of these other cryptocurrencies compared to Bitcoin, and you'll see that all of them are going down and to the right over time. They're getting more and more worthless in Bitcoin terms. And so basically what that shows you is the opportunity cost to buying those things versus Bitcoin over the long term. So that would be two reasons to not look at those other things. Many people, I've lost money on those. I know tons of people who've lost tons of money on those. And so as counterintuitive as it is, Bitcoin is the least risky of all those things and the most structurally sound and the most worthy of investment, especially at this point. Is now a good time to buy? Yeah, we already kind of went into that. Yes, all things being equal, over the next, you know, if we follow Bitcoin's history and we follow the cascade of news that we've heard, basically the next 12 months for Bitcoin are going to be nuts. Where to buy Bitcoin? We mentioned this in the beginning. We recommend Bitcoin only exchanges. Now, why does that matter? Basically, there are a number of different they're called Bitcoin exchanges or cryptocurrency exchanges where they sell all these different kinds of currency. There are a number of them, like Coinbase is probably the most famous, FTX before it blew up. There's another one, Kraken, where they sell all 10,000, probably more than that, to cryptocurrencies. Now, the question is, why do they sell those 10,000 cryptocurrencies? Do they actually believe that those cryptocurrencies are all going to be super valuable? They're going to be, you know, these projects are going to be here in 10, 20 years, 30 years to serve as money for people all over the world? No, they do not sell them for that reason. Again, they can have the plausible deniability to say, well, you know, we don't know. We're just going to sell whatever's available. In reality, those exchanges take between 1 to 2%. They charge a 1 to 2% fee off of every single trade, both buying and selling. And so by virtue of selling all those 10,000 cryptocurrencies, they're making way more money than they would if they only sold Bitcoin. Now, this is what sets apart the Bitcoin-only exchanges. There's also a group of exchanges that only sell Bitcoin. Okay, these cryptocurrency exchanges, they only believe in Bitcoin. And so they don't want to, you know, tarnish their name by selling these other things that are either known scams in the, or known gimmicks, jokes in the case of something like Doge, or just that, you know, they're easy come, easy go. They don't want to stain their name with those projects. And so they only sell Bitcoin. Now, you may think to yourself, well, I don't agree with their thesis. Surely there's going to be some of these other cryptocurrencies that are valuable. You might feel that way. Okay. And so you might think, man, they're stupid for only selling Bitcoin. But what you can't say is that they're scammers for only selling Bitcoin. Because in the short term, they're leaving millions and millions and millions of dollars on the table in the short term by not selling those things. They're limiting the amount of money that they could be making in the short term by not selling those things. So you may think they're stupid, but you can't think they're, or you can't think they're unethical, or at least anywhere near as unethical as as these other cryptocurrency exchanges. So we recommend only buying Bitcoin at exchanges where they only sell Bitcoin, because the incentives are aligned. They're acting in the best interest of their customers. So this would rule out things like Coinbase. This would rule out things like Kraken. This would rule out things like some of these other ones. In terms of these, what are some of the Bitcoin-only exchanges? Well, we mentioned one at the top of the show, River. River is the one that we recommend. It's just basically super easy to onboard. You can, you know, buy Bitcoin with your bank account, manage it really easily. You can withdraw it to your own private wallet where you control the keys. They will give you information to help you take those steps in a timely manner and in an easy way. So River is one of them. Swan is another company that only buys and sells Bitcoin. The Bitcoin Well is another company that they are a Canadian-based company, but they also work here in the United States. Their founder is a believer. We have friends in all of these companies. They're people who we love. We're grateful for them. So in terms of where to buy it, that's what you can do. Now, there are exceptions to this. So if you are somebody who's more privacy focused and you're sitting there thinking, all right, maybe you know a little bit more as you're hearing this. If you're looking for the easiest way to buy Bitcoin, then those are options. If you have other concerns. So let's say, you know, if you're trying to send money to places, let's say you're a missions organization and you're looking to send Bitcoin to places maybe in the Middle East or somewhere, some other countries where maybe you could get in trouble for being a Christian, and you want to send them money in a way that's not trackable to anywhere near the same degree, you can buy Bitcoin from some other different exchanges. So they're actually not even exchanges, but there's a company called Azteco. It's AZTCO. If you just Google that, you'll be able to find them, and you can buy what's called non-KYC Bitcoin. It's very good. It doesn't have a paper trail to the same degree that Bitcoin, that some of this other Bitcoin does. Again, if this is all new to you, don't worry about that. but that's a place where you can buy Bitcoin. We're very good friends with the people who run that company as well. The other thing that you can do is you can buy Bitcoin directly from somebody who mines Bitcoin. We know a number of different people who do that. And so if that's something that interests you as well, you can do that. That Bitcoin does normally, including Azteco, come at a premium. You usually pay at least a 5% premium to get Bitcoin from those places. So that's the quick version of where to buy. Let's see here. Some other objections. Okay, so I've gotten a number of objections. I always get objections. And again, as I mentioned, we did a whole podcast episode of outlining the five most common objections. I'm going to outline five more here that I've gotten over the last week or so. So I have a friend who's a very thoughtful, very godly guy. He basically is one of the headmaster. I think he's the headmaster at a Christian school, classical Christian school. And he basically said to me, I don't want to live in a world where Bitcoin's necessary. He's like, I already hate the amount of time that I have to spend on a computer, having to understand computers, having to, you know, do all these things. I just would rather not live in a world where that's necessary. I am super sympathetic to that to that argument. I wish we didn't live in a world where we needed internet, where we needed computers, and we needed to spend the time, money, energy to understand them. And obviously, all of those things can be, you know, we can misuse our time in those ways. We can spend too much time on these things. iPhone, guilty to that. I totally get that. And so I'm sympathetic to it. At the same time, in the same way as it's very difficult and it'd be, you know, leaving a lot of awesome, good things, very valuable, helpful things on the table to not use the internet, to not use computers. It's also, we're living in a world in which, you know, avoiding Bitcoin is not something that we have the luxury of doing. There's a number of reasons for that I could give. You know, in terms of missionaries, we've done whole episodes on this, but there are a number of mission organizations that are working in countries where it's increasingly difficult or impossible to send money from here, just using the existing banking system. And so they are constantly looking for ways to make that process easier. And Bitcoin does that. We have friends who whose missions organizations send them Bitcoin. They sell Bitcoin into the local market and are able to pay their bills, do all the kind of stuff that they need to do. So that's one reason why we don't have the luxury. Another would be, I have another episode of the podcast. I interviewed BJ Dichter, who's the spokesperson for the Canadian truckers protest. And BJ talked about the fact that, you know, when they were declared enemies of the state for not wanting to get the vaccine and not supporting the lockdowns to the degree that they did, the Canadian government declared them enemies of the state, cut them off from their bank accounts, and they were left rendered unable to pay their bills for a period of time, all this kind of stuff. And so what BJ talked about is that the only money that they were actually able to access and distribute to the truckers themselves during that period was the $900,000 of Bitcoin that they were donated. And so we look at this is another reason for Christians. You know, there's increasingly the threat of persecution or the threat of hostility from either state or national governments is a real thing, both here in the States and especially in other countries around the world. Bitcoin is a great tool that allows Christians to get around some of those things for the sake of the gospel, for the good of people everywhere. So those are two reasons why, you know, it's again, even though we wish that we lived in a world where we didn't need something like Bitcoin, where we didn't need to spend the time to understand it and to use it and all these kind of things, that's not the world we live in. There's many things that I wish didn't exist that are still real that we still have to deal with, and they're not good reasons to just avoid it altogether. Another thing that people might say is that Bitcoin is too expensive. Again, this is one of these things where everyone thinks Bitcoin's too expensive the first time they find out about it because their perception for the you know where Bitcoin could go is you know generally people just have a very difficult time thinking that Bitcoin could become anywhere near as valuable as it's already become even today and then going into the future, and just that is due to a number of reasons, but one of them being that we underestimate the amount of money printing that's going on in the world and the you know how much money printing can continue to happen and where that will go. Again, we've had some you know people elected in this, at least in the United States, that seem to be more concerned with fiscal responsibility and bringing down the debt and all these things. But basically, in some ways, it's just by virtue of the system, you're going to need to, you know, somebody once said this, you can't taper a Ponzi. And the United States banking system at this point, the currency system is a Ponzi scheme. And so basically they're going to need to continue to print money to do a lot of what they're trying to do. And so Bitcoin is just going to continue to gain in value because it's a scarce resource. There's a finite number of them, and there are effectively an unlimited amount of dollars that can be created. And so, so even though it seems expensive, it's still a good thing to be buying some of, even if you don't have a lot of money. It's something that you can, again, just think about percentages. People ask me all the time, what percentage of Bitcoin should I, what percentage of my net worth should I put in Bitcoin, whatever. The thing that I'm categorically willing to say is that it should be a non-zero percentage. The younger you are in a vacuum, the higher that percentage, you know, ought to be, because, you know, you have the value of youth. You have time to make up for, you know, let's say if Bitcoin were to like die tomorrow, it just totally disappeared, and you have, you know, if you have 1% of your net worth in Bitcoin, Bitcoin disappears, you've lost 1%. You know, not ideal, but that's not going to be the difference between you having your life ruined, being unable to retire, and those kind of things. But if you buy Bitcoin with 1% of your net worth, and that 1% does what Bitcoin does, and, you know, you end up getting, that could turn into 5, 10, 15, you know, it just, Bitcoin performs really well because it's because of its scarcity. So let's see here. Here's another objection I get. What if the electrical grid or the internet went down? What would you do? How would you use Bitcoin? The answer is, in the short term, that would be a bummer. In the short term, you know, you could do things. There's ways where you could, you know, use generators, you could use batteries to, you know, enable yourself to send Bitcoin transactions. More likely than not, this would be a localized thing. So one country would deal with this. It wouldn't affect every country on Earth. If there's a nuclear holocaust, we're going to have a lot bigger problems on our hand than just not being able to use Bitcoin. It's going to knock down, in a lack of electricity, a lack of internet, it's going to take down our entire economy. It's going to take down it's going to take down our medical systems. It's going to take down a lot of things. So that's, Bitcoin is going to be far and away not the only thing affected. It's going to affect everything. The question that I want to ask to those people all the time is, what if that never happens? You know, everyone is easy, especially in the Christian world, to have these diabolical predictions of what's going to happen in the world. That's fine. That's a possibility that we ought to think about. But what if that doesn't happen, period? Okay, what if things get better? Like, what if things don't degrade into a dystopian hellscape? Or here's another, let's say we grant that is going to happen at some point. What if that doesn't happen for 20 years? What if that doesn't happen for 30 years? What if that doesn't happen for 40 years? And between now and then, Bitcoin goes from being $90,000 a coin, which seems insane, which would have seemed insane 10 years ago, to $1 million a coin or $2 million a coin. And you're, you know, the justification for why you never did anything about it, you never got any exposure to it, is because you were afraid of what was going to happen in the future. That just, again, as a Christian, as a thinking person, that just doesn't make any sense. So what it is, it's not a call to avoid Bitcoin. It's a call to not get overexposed to Bitcoin, especially when you're new, you don't understand it. That's more what it's a call to. I talk about this all the time, but one of the best frameworks for thinking about Bitcoin, given its volatility, is to think about something else that's very volatile, and that's babies. So babies are very volatile. Okay, they fluctuate a ton. They're very unstable. All of these things, and yet nobody does. We live in a world in which that does happen. But for as long as there's been humans, there's been people who were willing to endure these periods of instability and the volatility of babies, because on the other end of them, on the other side of them, there are adults, and there are adults who are incredibly valuable, incredibly useful. Even just pragmatically, they can help throughout time. People have helped care for their aging parents. One of the motivations for having kids was so that you'd have someone to take care of you when you got old. And so you endure the volatility of, you know, the day-to-day volatility of children in order to get to a point where they are mature, they are more stable, and they are able to be much more obviously helpful to you and bring you lots of, you know, physical help and relief, and not just joy, the way that babies do. Something very similar has been happening with Bitcoin, and is happening with Bitcoin. Bitcoin, you know, is so volatile because it's still relatively new. It's only existed for 16 years, and still relatively is a very small percentage of people in the world own any of it. Still to this day, only about 1% of anyone in the world owns any Bitcoin. And who is the potential market for Bitcoin? Well, it's about 4 billion people. 4 billion people have internet today. And have the ability to use Bitcoin. So again, just taking it, it's not good stewardship to just make a decision based on the worst thing that could happen. In order to be a good steward, you also have to look at, okay, well, what if the worst doesn't happen? What's the other side of this as well? And so this is why I just encourage people to, you know, to Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't just be like, oh, it's volatile. Don't have any of it. Volatility is the price of life. If you want something that's perfectly stable, go get a dead thing. Dead things are perfectly stable. By the time, you know, if you're sitting there waiting for Bitcoin to become perfectly stable to use it, I mean, you're going to miss out on a lot of, you know, potential return. Everyone who's investing in the stock market is not looking for stability. Okay, they're looking for something that can help grow their investments, whether it's, you know, whether it's grow it a little or grow a lot. They're looking for some sort of volatility, and they want that to be, they want the upside volatility to outweigh the downside volatility. So that would be another thing that I would say. The last thing is, I get this question, you know, what is Bitcoin for? And this is where a lot of the objections come from, is because people, they object to Bitcoin based on one or two objections and basically leaving out a number of other concerns. Bitcoin is, again, designed to be money that a government can't hyperinflate. Government can't create more of it. It's designed to be a money that can be used completely outside of the existing banking system. So I don't need use TIE in exchange to my bank account. I can go find someone on the internet who has Bitcoin. I can take cash out of my bank account and I can go buy Bitcoin from that person without ever needing to interact with a bank. I can also sell goods that I have for Bitcoin. There's an increasingly large market of people who are willing to sell houses for Bitcoin or buy houses with Bitcoin. This market is just continuing to grow both here in the States and around the world. And so again, Bitcoin is designed to be a trustless monetary unit, monetary system that basically gives people an option outside of the existing financial system that increasingly preys upon them and people all over the world. So those are just a number of objections that, again, if you're new here, you're new to thinking about these things, you might have. I'm sure that there's other ones that you're sitting there thinking of, man, I wish you would have answered this question. If that's you, please reach out. You can send us an email. You can reach out to us on Twitter. Reach out to us at info@tgfb.com. And I'm happy to do future episodes where we just answer more questions that people have, more objections to Bitcoin. Or if you just have normal questions, you're like, hey, I'm in, but I have questions about this. I have questions about, different Bitcoin related products. I had somebody reach out to me the other day and ask about is there like a Bitcoin IRA? I've got a traditional IRA. Can I buy Bitcoin with that? Happy to answer those kind of questions. That's the end of this episode. Again, if you have other questions, feel free to reach out, info@tgfb.com, or reach out to us directly on Twitter. Our handle is @thankgodforBTC. You can also find me, Jordan, through that way. My handle on Twitter is @JMBushWrites, WRITES. And we're happy to answer questions. Again, anything we can do, we'd love to help. In the future, again, we're going to be doing, the next episode is likely going to be this another episode answering some of these objections, answering other questions. If there are specific episodes that you'd like us to talk about, hey, I'd love to hear you talk to this person or talk about this issue, please reach out and let us know. We love listener feedback. And like I mentioned, please reach out to our sponsors, river.com, CrowdHealth, and Farmer Bill's Biltong. Go reach out to them, support them, and let them know that you came from us. You can use promo code TGFB at all three of those places and get discounts. And again, help us to continue doing this podcast. We are grateful for you guys, and we look forward to talking to you on the next episode of the TGFB podcast.